your source for everything paranormal.
Para-X.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey everybody, Merry Meet and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. We're going to be stirring it up tonight with Monica Bedursky. Now, she is a professional artist, author, advisor, chartered herbalist, Witchcraft North Arts and Cultural Festival founder and co-founder of IMMA, the International Museum of Mystical Arts. As a tarot reader for over 40 years, she's been a follower of the Shadow Path tradition, and her advice assists people in making positive changes to their lives throughout self-awareness, earth-based spiritual growth, and by embracing empowerment and transformative ways of working with spiritual and creative energies. Boy, I should have put a period in that sentence. And tonight we're going to be talking about Shadow Path tradition. We're going to be talking about shadow work, her Shadowland Leonorman deck, her art, and whatever else we can squeeze into almost an hour. For those of you in the chat room, feel free to ask Monica questions or share comments. And for those listening outside chat, come join us at paraxradionetwork.com. Hi, Monica. Welcome.
Hi, Marla. Nice to be here.
You're all the way up north in Canada. Yeah.
Yep, I'm coming to you from Tuckeronto, which is the indigenous name for Toronto. We're just right on the U.S. border, across from Buffalo.
Ah, okay. Not too far. And I mean, you know, as far as... Never mind. we've got really a lot to talk about tonight, and so I want to get started. I want to talk about the new deck, which is the Shadow Companion working deck that's going to be released shortly. But first off, tell us what the Leonorman tradition cards are, and then we'll talk about the deck itself.
Oh, sure. This is actually from a game that came about in the late 1700s in Germany. And they were cards with little symbols, and it was kind of like a game of snakes and ladders. It was, a game in which you rolled the dice, moved your markers ahead or back. Depending on the card that you landed on, you'd either move forward or back because they were negative, positive, or neutral cards. And somehow those came into the court of Josephine with Mademoiselle Lenormand, who was, I guess you would call her, a seer. She was an author, and she was the court seer for Napoleon and Josephine. And she used similar cards, apparently, to do some of her divination. And... the name Lenormand became attached to this deck, even though it's contested whether she had these cards or not. A very well-known tarot authority, Mary Kay Greer, has done a lot of research with Lenormand cards and their beginnings, and she has made a connection to coffee cards that came from coffee houses, and they were symbols originally from coffee ground readings. So really they have a long and circuitous route to what we now know as a Lenormand deck, which is 36 symbol cards, such as book or tree. And each card has a particular meaning ascribed to it. So basically you put all 36 cards out, which it's known as the grand tableau or the large setting or table. And you are reading the cards by proximity as opposed to very specific spreads with tarot cards. So there is that difference in how they are read, but basically they also encompass archetypes and symbols.
Yeah, you know, because it kind of reminded me of a cross between an oracle deck and a tarot deck, because, you know, with oracle decks, you create them and kind of have free reign of the cards, and we choose the meanings. And the tarot deck generally has the same four suits and cards, the arcanas. So, it kind of fit, like, right in the middle there. I mean, I'd heard about Lenormand decks a lot, but I just kind of never knew what they were. So this was kind of fascinating.
Oh, yeah, and I think that's a very good assessment, actually, Marla. I do think that they are kind of a cross between oracle decks and tarot, for sure. You know, they're very much in the middle in that they do have a history and a system. They're considered emblems rather than symbols, meaning that you probably shouldn't mess with the meanings. Of course, I do because I'm an artist. But they came with a very specific set of positive, negative connotations and meaning within their original context. So they're a little different than symbols, but they are very similar to oracle cards.
Well, I pulled a card for myself this morning. You know, you got to try it out. And I got the letter. Now, I love what you do with your artwork because the illustrations to me are quite whimsical. And this one was, it was a bat carrying a letter in his claws, and a cute bat at that. And so the meaning actually was pretty much right on point as far as communications and stuff goes. So that was kind of a neat, all of a sudden, oh, wow, first card, it worked. So just wanted to let you know. It was pretty
Thank
cool.
You.
Yeah. So where, I mean, in your artwork in general, because you are an artist, is that kind of the way that you do all kind of art, kind of in a whimsical, kind of makes you smile, happiness kind of looking thing?
Kind of it is. I really like things that are creepy and that make you smile. So the combination seems to be there. And what I find really interesting is that some people do find it incredibly disturbing, believe it or not, and other people do see it. It's whimsy and lightheartedness. You know, as a fan of Addams Family and, you know, Edward Gorey and Tim Burton, mm-hmm. I think there's that element of, you know, life can be creepy, but maybe we can chuckle about it to it. And that is how all of my art works, indeed. It looks the same.
Yeah, I'm just looking in the chat room. We have a couple of comments. Kathy said those cards sound a little complicated but interesting, but they're really not. I mean, you know, there's, of course, a booklet that goes along with them. They're very simple. They have this simplicity of an oracle deck. You don't have to look at the cards to see the little things hidden behind whoever it is standing there, you know, whatever. I think they're really kind of easy, right?
Well, they are. And let me just say that, like tarot, there are people who are Lenormand purists who will only read with the grand tableau in the proper, air quote, way. And I think I have a lot of respect for that. And I mean no disrespect by playing around with Lenormand the way I do, because they're not exactly standard to what you would expect to find in many Lenormand decks, and they can be used as single card readings, so you can make it really simple. And as somebody who comes from a background of teaching art and design at a university, mm-hmm. I really think that communication is absolutely vital, and it is part of my job as an artist and a designer, more importantly, to make it accessible to you. So if you would like to use it in a really simplified manner, I think that's wonderful. A single card pull a day, to me, okay, mm-hmm. Is just as valid as having spreads or having the entire deck out in a grand tableau.
I agree with that. Sometimes you need to get a little bit deeper. You have to dig a little deeper. But sometimes, you know, just one card can just answer everything and tell you everything you need to know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
There's another question. Sorry. It's kind of a two-parter. Can anyone read tarot cards or just some people that have a gift, and is reading the tarot or cards dangerous like Ouija boards?
That's a very interesting two-part question. Personally, I would say anyone can read cards. Absolutely. You don't have to have any special gift or talent. I think like anything, you just need to practice. You are well advised to read a little bit of the context and history. Of course, I'm saying that as an educator, right? But I think it is important to understand the context and history of the cards. But anyone can read cards. I don't think it takes any special gift or talent whatsoever. You certainly don't need to be psychic. Some people read strictly through the standard methodologies of a Rider-Waite-Smith deck, for instance, and ascribe those meanings unchanged. Other people will read very intuitively. And I think a lot of us fall in between the two. And we know the cards and their meanings, but then we also read them intuitively and put that together. So we're making some leaps there. And as far as it being dangerous, well, I consider any tool that you use for divination, because of my own spiritual practice, a portal. So in that sense, it's not dangerous, but I do cleanse my space and I do a lot of ensuring that I have spiritual boundaries in place. So that when I am using my cards in a very spiritual way, nothing else would invade my space energetically. So I don't see it as a danger, perhaps, but I do talk a great deal in my accompanying books about spiritual hygiene, and that I would exercise some caution as far as considering them a portal.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I mean, divination is, you know, can be or whatever, but I think cards, well, any form of divination, you clear your space and just make it a little bit safe, because you just never know. You know, we're just mortal. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes, so we have to take care.
Yep.
I got another question from the chat room. With so many different types of decks out there, how does one figure out which one is best for them?
Yeah, that's a really good question, too, because, you know, within the last, 15 years or so, even the last few, there's been such a surge of popularity of Oracle cards, Tarot cards, Lenormand. I think what you're drawn to as far as imagery is really important.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at the artwork first and foremost, you might be drawn to that. And I would pick a deck, because I'm a visual person, on the artwork. And I've also collected them for that reason. I think that's an important thing to do. Most people do deck walkthroughs now and show you a lot of the imagery, so you're not just stuck looking at a picture on the back of the box. And if you're clicking with that kind of imagery and you see yourself in it, I think that is a deck that would work most effectively for you. I wouldn't pick a deck just because I think it's pretty. I have to connect with it and relate to it. So relatability to me is really important.
Yeah, and usually when you're looking for a deck, I mean, you have the Oracle cards there, you have the Tarot cards there, you have the others, you know, everything is there. So it's not like you have to go to a special section just for the Tarot. I always see them together, you know, all mixed up. So maybe being drawn, somebody might be drawn to a certain Tarot deck, somebody might be drawn to the certain Oracle deck, you know, so it's not like you have to put in your mind, well, I want to do this or that, just whatever genre it is, grab it, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Trust your gut on it, and if it just looks appealing and you're drawn to it, you keep coming back to it, there's probably a good reason for it, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we were talking about this deck being, now where did I see it? My notes are going crazy. Going to be talking about this in addition to the shadow work, right? The Lamorne deck?
Yes.
Okay, so We do need to talk about the shadow work also, because that's really important. We've got, I mean, I went to your website, so we have like 1,000 things to talk about, seriously, and not 1,000 minutes. But you've got more than one deck, though. This isn't your only deck. So there's another tarot deck, there's an oracle deck, and what am I leaving out? Tell everybody about all the decks you have.
I have the House of Shadows Lenormand deck as well, and I had a Lucky Lenormand deck ages ago. I have an upcoming oracle called the Bat's Blood Ink Oracle that's coming out in a few weeks as well as the Shadowland Lenormand, and a Bone and Curio casting deck coming out next year. So I have a few, and most of them do involve some form of shadow work.
All right, so let's get down and dirty with shadow work now. get to the nitty-gritty here. Give us a little bit of background on this path, and then, you know, a little bit about the path tradition.
Well, that's interesting because it came about over many, many years. I do admit I am drawn to shadows, and not in an evil, you know, muahaha way, just because I do work in a lot of liminal space. I've done a lot of, I guess, mediumship work with people, and it is in that in-between realm, that liminal space, that I feel very comfortable. Mm-hmm. So that is a shadow space for me, first and foremost. And then there is the shadow work of Carl Jung, and his ideas of the shadow self, which has been very much relegated to the margins and subconscious of all of us, and those things that are generally deemed inappropriate by society. So often those are things that are out of any particular area's protocol or ideas of what you might say is proper. So if society is telling you that being a certain way, being a wild woman and, say, sexually liberated is a horrible thing, you might suppress that part of yourself to the deep, dark shadows and deny that that is part of yourself. Jung's concern, of course, was that if we do this with a lot of different aspects, we're not really living as whole, integrated people, but very fragmented, and we're not living our lives to their fullest potential. So I feel that because he was also responsible for archetypes, I'm an artist, I love symbols and archetypes, it just seemed like a natural fit to help people recognize those parts of self maybe that they're denying and mm-hmm. that they don't really want to look at, and perhaps in a safe way, which is also very consciously why my artwork is lighthearted, mm-hmm. because you know, I've drawn things in the past, pen and ink and other things that could probably be classified as a little darker, in quotes. Mm-hmm. But I realize that shadow work can be a bit daunting to begin with. So I very purposely made my art a little more lighthearted. And to follow that path is a path of self-discovery, healing, and integration. Accepting yourself for who you are, all of the parts of you, and I guess writing your own narrative and maybe taking a look at what society is telling you you should be and taking your story back.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and because like you were mentioning, people don't always dwell or even acknowledge their shadow side, even though it's there, because they think it's something bad and horrible. And there's a question in the chat room. Is shadow work like the Sith side of the Force, neither good or bad?
I would say so. It's disturbing, though, I think, for a lot of people. Even our bright shadows, supposedly, which are aspects of ourselves that we may deny because, well, again, it's the same thing. Let's say you're average guy and society tells you you can't be sensitive. You might just deny your sensitivity, but is that a bad thing, being sensitive? No, it's the judgments or the binary from mm-hmm. society of good and bad are being imposed. So yes, in a way, it is very neutral.
And I want to mention that on your website, you offer a free quick start for shadow work. So this might be a good time to give out your website information to those who might want to download or print it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, if you can spell my first and last name, which can be tricky, I am monicabodierski.com, and you can download that PDF so you can get started. And hopefully it will help you out with that.
It's getting to know you better, I think. And that's kind of really important. And again, we don't always face up to what we think is wrong or bad or stupid or whatever. And so when by not doing that, we're not exploring the whole self, right?
Exactly, exactly. And I think the really important aspect there is we often project when we're not accepting those parts of self, we may inadvertently project them onto others, meaning, you know how that is. You know, you might think somebody's, you know, why are you so shy? You should get out there and speak up, when we think that we should be speaking up about something. So rather than admit that we're not, we would project that onto somebody else. And I think doing shadow work and accepting ourselves is incredibly healing, because we'll start to build empathy as well for other people. Do you know, we accept those parts of self, we'll start to accept them with other people and perhaps not be so judgmental either, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, we cannot be judgmental on ourselves either, because that's the first thing that we do is, you know, well, this is wrong and I'm stupid and I didn't get that, you know? And this, I think, going into both sides, the shadow side and the regular side, is going to help that too, give you a little bit more confidence, giving you maybe more understanding that not everything is black and white, you know, things are gray. And that's always a good place to be, because that's where the possibilities are.
Exactly. And that's what we need to understand with that binary of judgment, that, you know what, that is just a perspective. You know, don't get beat yourself up for being a certain way, because society says that's not ideal. Those are the internalized issues. Everything is shades of gray, and it's the quick and easy way to relegate us to good or bad. And we do it to ourselves, and we should be kind to ourselves for sure.
Yeah, better easier said than done on that one. Let's talk a little bit about shadow work, because some people will think, you know, it's what we're talking about the self-image and looking at the shadow side. But somebody in the chat room just said, is that witchcraft, shadow work?
No. It's actually what trains psychiatrists work with their patients. Carl Jung was a contemporary of Sigmund Freud. And he was a psychiatrist, and his life was dedicated to helping people through psychological issues. So shadow work can be used by witches, but if you engage in shadow work, you haven't become a witch.
Some people are so afraid of that, and it's not a bad thing, you know, but I digress.
No.
Yeah, it's just really kind of interesting that people form certain stereotypical things, and shadow is always negative and stuff. And you know, if you say shadow land, shadow work, people are going to think that's totally the left-hand path, you know, and not to stay away, you know, get away from there kind of thing, right?
Right. Take a look at the art and you will see. It is not so frightening. And you were asking specifically about the shadow path tradition. That is part of my practice and my spiritual practice. And you can see that it is, if you look at my website description, it's a syncretic path, and it's a contemporary tradition that I started. And yes, it does have pagan beliefs and practices, and it is familial, spiritual, and artistic gifts that I have. But there is nothing negative within that. There is no, I'm not acting against any other religion or spirituality. I respect all spiritualities. Mm-hmm. It's just that I have a different path that I follow. It's a very positive one, I believe. Ancestors are venerated, which is a sign mm-hmm. of respect.
Yes.
I think creativity is sacred. Everyone on this earth walk is equal and should be given equal opportunities. You don't need to believe in any particular deities. That's up to you. So, I mean, if I'm against anything, it's against oppression of free speech and hierarchy that doesn't allow people to be equal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I guess my spirituality, strays into my ethics and, sometimes a little teensy weensy bit politics, don't hang up on me. ritual spell work, personally, I do that for healing and do it for myself. That's just my own path. Mm-hmm. Herbalism is something that I was trained in. I'm a chartered herbalist. I assist others to become empowered. So rather than tell them the way they should be, I prefer to offer them tools that will help them become who they want to be, whatever that is, without judgment. So that's a very different thing. There's no dogma in my path. There's no, you have to do this or this will happen. Like, it's pretty open. It's kind of hippie witchcraft.
That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, what you're saying now is very pagan. Like, there's, when you're talking about certain things, I'm thinking, Wicca. And then you're talking about something else, and I'm thinking another path. And, some of us are on an eclectic path. Some of us are, it's hard to put yourself. Well, Wiccans will call themselves Wiccans, and others will call themselves that. But I kind of think I'm like a mix of a lot of things. You take the best of different things and put it together, and you can't go wrong, I don't think.
I think that's absolutely correct. And I just, for my own personal self, I'm not judging anyone who calls themselves eclectic. I just make the distinction that I am syncretic, which is a difference in that I'm not just picking and choosing so much as following a lot of my familial traditions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's a bit of a difference because I understand that appropriation is a sensitive issue for many people. So I just want to make the distinction that I am, following a syncretic path.
Okay. Now I've got another question from the chat room. We're going to go back to Taro for a second, and then I've got a couple other things for you. But he wants to know, what advice do you have for someone who wants to get into tarot readings?
The advice I give, I would say find a deck that is fairly straightforward. I often, when I teach tarot, I suggest people start with a very simple Rider-Waite-Smith deck, which is kind of the standard. It has been since about 1910 when it was created. And the reason I suggest that is, being an artist, I know how creative people get. We tend to stray far and wide, which is really good on the one hand, but you won't be able to transfer some things you learn from very particular decks to all decks. So if you start with a standard Rider-Waite-Smith deck and you take lessons, I would suggest. It's difficult with a number of, there's good books out there too, like mm-hmm. Mary Kay Greer and Rachel Pollack.
Mm-hmm.
But I would also take lessons and be really patient. Don't try to memorize the book, but pull a card and look at the symbols in the card and understand the different elements that are involved with the suits. Take your time. There's a lot of cards. I know I drew them all. So you need to really take your time and almost experience each of the cards. I think the issue with most people is they think they can learn it in an hour you can do this in 10 minutes. And it's you can't, but you won't be doing it really well. So you might want to take your time and really slow it down and just say, I'm just going to pull a card every day. I'm going to look at it. I'm going to sit with it. Be patient. And look up the meaning. Look up keywords. Don't memorize it. But see maybe at the end of the day, because I pull them in the morning, maybe check in at the end of the day and see what happened that correlates with that card. So you're making an association to your lived experience. That is a way that we're taught at university to teach people that you're applying it right away to your lived experience. And that will help your memory much more than trying to memorize anything.
Good advice. Really good advice. And don't, like you said, don't expect to do it in 5 minutes. I mean, I've been doing it for years and still learning. So that's the good thing. Now let's talk a little bit about some of the services you have to offer, like readings and witch life coaching. But I want to start with the readings because yours are a bit different than others. You said that you prefer not to do predictive readings. And I think most people who want readings want to know what's coming up. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think there's a... Yeah, maybe I wasn't nuanced enough in my language usage. I think I do a form of predictive reading, but kind of by implication, there are a lot of people who will just say, what will happen 2 days from now? And I won't turn over a card and say, you'll get hit by a bus. What would occur is I would ask you, what are the choices? With an open-ended question, I would say, somebody would ask, if I apply for this job, what will happen? If I don't apply for this job and stay in my current job, what will occur? So you have a choice. You're a very active participant in this. You're not passively watching your destiny unfold. You're an active participant, and what I'd like you to do is ask a question that involves you. So, okay, if you apply for this job, it looks pretty good. It looks like you will get it, okay? If you stay in your work, well, it looks like you'll be happy but bored. So there's always the choice rather than that very... hands-off kind of destiny is what it is, and just flip over the cards, and I will just tell you everything that's going to happen. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
To me, that is me keeping all the power, and you have no say in it as somebody who's getting a reading. What I'd like somebody who's getting a reading to know is that you have a say. There's free will that works in conjunction with destiny. So I think that's sort of what I was saying about, you know, probably not that eloquently, but I was trying to get that point across.
Okay, that makes good sense to me now. but you know, I mean, we all read in various ways. Like you also say, you're not going to tell somebody, you know, well, you're going to die tomorrow. You know, I mean, even if you saw something like that, we all have to be kind of, careful in what we say and how we say it. Because, you know, the cards don't lie, but sometimes we can misinterpret at times.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so that's the last thing we need to do is misinterpret and somebody gets, you know, very angry or worse. So, we got to watch that. All right. Now, let's also talk a little bit about witch life coaching.
Yes.
Go for it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I have accumulated a background of being a small business owner for a very long time as an entrepreneur. You kind of have to be if you're creative as an artist. It's not like or a designer and illustrator. So I have that experience. I've also had experience teaching people at university, and I have, my witch practice. So I decided to set up a coaching where I can offer spiritual advice, business advice, and training in a way with my experience that is just a very holistic witch way of coaching. Because life coaching, just everyday life coaching, doesn't really serve the pagan community very well. Mm-hmm. You know, I might ask people to, you know, share with me what their current practice is and how that could work or dovetail very nicely with starting a business, mm-hmm. Spiritual business, or their artistic or creative practice. So there's varying degrees of spirituality and often business, as well as just my teaching experience.
Sounds, I mean, you know, I was reading more in depth, and it sounds really, really interesting, and of what you said, too. Now, also, you've got a YouTube channel. So what can people find there, and what's the channel's name?
It is Monica Bodirsky Shadowland. It's not spooky. I do talk about all sorts of different things. I get people asking me questions about tarot, about Lenormand cards, about creativity, and I try to answer as many things as I can. Sometimes I've gone out to my garden and to my little conjure cabin, as it's known. I share some herbalism that I use in my practice and making certain inks. So there's all sorts of stuff in there, but primarily you will find tips about tarot and divination and Lenormand and shadow work. So if you need a quick start or tips on tarot and you are starting, I could suggest you go look at the channel too. And you'll find all sorts of interesting things. I think they're relatively short and to the point. And they're, again, very holistic in all the different aspects, including encounters with spirits. I have a couple of videos that are Storytime Ink, in which I'm just drawing because people have said they want to see me create the actual artwork while I share a story. So I think there's something there for everyone.
What comes first, the artwork or the story?
I think the vision, but sometimes there is an auditory experience of a story. I, for my own artwork, they're so inextricably linked. I will do my own spiritual journey to see what I encounter. I've told people before, some of my humorous characters are characters I've encountered in Shadowland, which is in my mind and possibly elsewhere, depending on your belief system. Mm-hmm. And they are aspects both of ourselves, and they're also actual beings in Shadowland, and they come with their stories. So it's a little difficult to tell which comes first, but mm-hmm. if I had to, I'd say probably visually.
Okay. Cause sometimes, like, you see a character, a shape or something that kind of leads to a story. And I'm looking at the deck right now and I'm really cracking up. The mice got to me good. this is really interesting. And also when you're reading these cards, this deck, do you do reversals?
I don't use reversals. And, you know, the same reason that you and I were talking before about shades of gray, I think that every card has a shadow aspect or a hidden aspect. Potentially what we would read as positive and potentially what we would read as negative. Just by looking at the image, you will probably be able to find those. So I don't read reversals, generally speaking, because there's all sorts of nuances to every card.
Okay. On tarot, do you do reversals?
Not with my deck, no, for the same reason.
Yeah. I mean, it gets complicated. I mean, you know, you have 78 cards to work with upright, and then if you have to think about the opposite, the reversals, I mean, that makes people not want to do readings, you know, because it's like overwhelming in a sense.
Yeah, it can be. And you know what? I mean, the 10 of cups, let's just say, I've got an image of a crab with 10 pots of paint because that's my ultimate emotional happy space. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it might not be for everyone. And depending entirely on the question, If somebody were to ask about what is blocking them from getting something done, I might actually see the Ten of Cups as saying you're so busy striving for the ultimate joy in your art, you're kind of missing out on stuff. So you could take it in a potentially reversal, depending on the question and the context.
Mm-hmm. And trust your gut, whatever you're feeling,
exactly.
Go for it. Yeah. And okay. We're going to have to run in a couple of minutes. But I do want to say that Schiffer did it again with this box. I love Schiffer boxes. And this is one I've never seen before. And it took me a minute. It was too easy to figure out how to open it. So,
right?
Yeah, I just every so often they come out with the neatest box. And the deck has beautiful gold all around it. So that's really nice. And the booklet is there for anybody. You know, you just take a look. You get the keywords, the shadow, the message. And then you also have reflection questions for each card. So, and anybody can do it, seriously. So give out your website again one more time, because, I mean, really, people go over there, download the shadow thing, and look at all the stuff that's there. It's kind of amazing and fun.
Oh, well, thank you very much. So, yeah, it is just HTTPS, you know the drill, / www.monicabodierski.com. And just get the spelling of the name right. It can be tricky, but there is only one monicabodierski.com, so you're likely to find me regardless.
Yeah, I've noticed that sometimes when I misspell something, that corrects me. It says, did you mean, you know, and then you click that and you go, thank you very much. All right. Well, somebody, when you were mentioning your Bat Blood deck, somebody in the chat room got really excited about it. So maybe when it comes out, come back.
Oh, you know what? You can already pre-order. I just got flooded with pre-orders because I posted it in my shop. So if you'd like to go to my shop and pre-order, you will be one of the first lucky people to get one mailed out to you.
Oh, very cool. And one really quick thing, I've got to talk really fast. When people shop at your on your website, you have one tree planted. You want to, like, in 30 Absolutely. Seconds explain what that is?
Yes, I can do that really quickly. I am a proud reforestation partner of the organization One Tree Planted. Since 2014, they have planted over 11 million trees worldwide, and that is in an effort to stop global warming. So for every single purchase you make, you are actually planting a tree. So thank you so much.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you for visiting with us tonight, and hopefully, again, you will come.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2024. The Mysterioso March by Kevin MacLeod is licensed through Incompetech.com.